It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh yeah, we are back live. The computer has been moved, and we are in the News to Me, Sad to Me space. I'm Marcus. It is September 11th, the day that the United States doesn't want to ever forget. If you're tuning in, don't forget, you can always go to com. I always like to connect live on the air, so just go over here. I'm going to SSH over to SDF, just with, you can SSH to tty.sdf, connect over there, type com, C-O-M, to connect to the commode, and then hit G for go to, and then anon radio. Just type it out, hit enter, bam. You are now connected, in the wired, so to speak. So, howdy, howdy, howdy. So, of course, since it is the first part of the show, we've got to go and start with our normal segment.
World news.
That's right. Let's talk about what's going on in the world before we get into it. So, boop, boop, ba-doop. Oh, look at that. SMJ and X1 and Ratsu are all hanging out. And Tobe! Heck yeah! Alright, so check it out. So, France sees clear worsening of COVID-19 outbreak. Government maintains strategy. So this is coming to us from France 24 and is about France. France is seeing acceleration of the COVID-19 outbreak after a surge in infections, but aims to avoid any new nationwide lockdown. Prime Minister Jean Castex, C-A-S-T-E-X. I thought we had a different guy over there in... Anyway, alright, that's who's the Prime Minister, Jean Castex. There's a clear worsening in France of the spread of COVID-19, which has not lowered in intensity and will still be with us for months. But he did not announce any major new restrictions, saying France's aim is to avoid a general lockdown and succeed in living with the virus through social distancing, mask wearing, and ramped up testing. So, there we go. Avoid France. Avoid France. Danger. Lots of COVID. Okay. My homepage is startpage.com. I don't know why I didn't have that cleared out. So, this is something we talked about before. That was Moira. So we've got here, the BBC's letting us know, Germany says 10 European countries have agreed to take 400 unaccompanied minors who fled Greece's largest migrant camp when it was gutted by fire. Most will go to Germany and France, Interior Minister Horst Seehofer told reporters on Friday. Close to 13,000 people had been living in the Moira camp in Lesbos. Families had been sleeping in fields and on roads after fleeing the blaze on Wednesday. Near the ruins, residents of the island blocked roads to stop charities from delivering aid and said they were against the construction of new tents. Wow, that's so cold. There's kids sleeping on the street and in these fields, and the citizens are like, no, don't give them any food or shelter. Wow. Anyway, the Greek militator later used helicopters to reach the site and have begun setting up replacement accommodations. After visiting the area, European Mission Vice President Marguerite Sanchez announced that the devastated camp would be replaced by a modern facility at the same location. So, that's pretty wild. So, something that's a little bit different. This is from the Black Agenda Report, and this headline, it's time to acknowledge the Hutu genocide and Rwandan occupation of the DR Congo. So, global power elites are silent about Hutu genocide and Rwanda's ongoing occupation of the Democratic Republic of Congo, says Anne Garrison, because it has served their interests for many years. My first contribution to Black Agenda Report was Madam President? No, Madam Prisoner. A profile of Rwandan political prisoner Victoire Ingabi Umhoza, published in January 2014. Late Black Agenda Report editor Bruce A. Dixon had asked me to write it after following my conversations with Victoria and other Rwandan dissidents for some years. The conversations began in January 2010. When I looked into why no viable challenger to incumbent President Paul Kagame were being allowed into that year's election. Victoria had just returned from Netherlands to Rwanda to stand as a candidate, but she had almost immediately been placed under house arrest. Why? Because upon arriving in Rwanda's capital, where she was met by Rwandan press and fellow dissidents, she went straight to the genocide memorial and made this statement. We totally agree and are conscious that there has been a genocide against Tutsis, and we seriously and continuously advocate that all those who were responsible be brought before the courts of justice. We also agree that there have been serious crimes against humanity and war crimes against Hutus. Those who committed them have to bear the legal consequences. So, pretty wild. And as X1 points out, Greece has been having some financial troubles, so maybe why they were a little upset and or not interested in spending money on rebuilding the refugee camp. So, we still have so much domestic news to go or world news to go through, but we're just going to cut it down to this one, which I thought was pretty great. It's coming out of the UK. The distinctive Pringles tube is being redesigned after criticisms that it's almost impossible to recycle. The current container for the potato-based snack was condemned as a recycler's nightmare. It's a complex construction with a metal base, plastic cap, metal tear-off lid, and foil-lined cardboard sleeve. The Recycling Association dubbed it the number one recycling villain, along with the Lucozade sports bottle. Now Pringles maker Kellogg is trialing a simpler can, although experts say it's not a full solution. The existing version is particularly troublesome because it combines so many different materials. So, this is kind of neat. I thought it was cool because this is something that appears to be going on in Tesco, but it's going to have an impact all over the world. And while it's not necessarily COVID-related, it still has a big impact. So, I'm pretty excited about it. So, check it out. You can read more about it and see the new can on bbc.com or bbc.co.uk if you swing that way. So what do we got? Well, we're going to go jump into some domestic news, but before that, we need to chill out, listen to a song, because it's going to get heavy here in a minute. So this is Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, It's All Going to Pop.
Well, now it's all I can tell the world's gone to hell, and we're sure gonna miss it a lot. All of the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. I got $100 bill, friend, you keep your pills, cause it's all the way to pot. That cackle babble head in the box must think I'm dumb as a rock. Reading me the news while I'm kicking off my shoes, and it's scaring me out of my socks. Admitted a stranger, I'm not. But buddy, let me tell you what. If you ask old Will to say, here's the deal, friends, it's all going to pot. Well, it's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. Little thing in the world. hit the spot. Got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. And this is news to me. We're about to jump off into the deep end with a bunch of domestic news because it is September 11th. So don't forget, this was a terror attack on the United States. And just so you guys know my point of view, I was angry at the Bush administration. I'd been sick, like straight sick, like had a cold for probably 6 or so months. I was working at Walmart. I didn't make enough money to afford to go to the doctor. I didn't have insurance. I was just taking Sudafed and NyQuil and DayQuil. I was often taking NyQuil and DayQuil together, and was being forced to work overtime. And so it was the end of like 6 days in a row of working like, I don't know, 16-hour days. And I'm trying to leave, and the whole hallway is full of all the managers and people who are just in my way at 9 o'clock in the morning after the end of my shift. And they were all just standing around a little TV watching this, like a building on fire. And I was like, okay, what happened? And they're like, a plane just hit a building. It's like, okay, did the building fall down? They're like, one of them did. It's like, okay, that's what happens. And then I left. And that was as much as that ever impacted me, except for then I had to stock and carry a bunch of flags in and out of the store, lots of Made in China flags. It was really fun. So anyway, I've never really had a big connection to this day, so it's all, I kind of hate what the U.S. did in its name, and I just wanted to share that story, tell everyone that I recognize that it's a big day and it hurts a lot of people. I don't have a big personal connection to it, so some of the way I read these stories might seem less connected or less sensitive than you might normally expect, and that's why. It's because I'm really more angry at the U.S. for how it reacted than how what happened to us. So the first story we have is from Democracy Now, and it covers the cost of war. So after 9/11 attacks, U.S. war displaced at least 37 million people around the world. And one of my favorite things that we did is we sprayed, depleted uranium bullets all over the Middle East, causing, countless children to be born with birth defects or just die or people getting mutilated. Anyway, as the United States marks 19 years since the September 11th terrorist attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people, a new report finds at least 37 million people in 8 countries have been displaced since the start of the so-called global war on terror since 2001. The cost of the war project at Brown University also found more than 800,000 people have been killed since U.S. forces began fighting in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Pakistan, and Yemen at a cost of $6.4 trillion to U.S. taxpayers. The U.S. has played a disproportionate role in waging war and launching war and perpetuating war over the last 19 years, says report co-author David Vine, a professor of anthropology at American University. You can listen or watch or just check it all out. It's about 34 minutes long story if you want to listen to it at Democracy Now. So let's keep on with talking about children who are at risk of dying or dying, because I mean that's what's going on in the world. The World Socialist website has this article. Over 10,500 Florida children test positive for COVID-19 after schools reopen. According to a report published in the Washington Post earlier this week, a case of COVID-19 among school-aged children in Florida have increased by 34% since schools started to reopen in early August. More than 10,500 children under the age of 18 have tested positive since August 10th, when about half of the state's 4,500 public schools began ushering students back into their buildings. On Wednesday, the Orlando Sentinel reported more than 800 students and staff in Central Florida schools were now under quarantine orders after potentially being exposed to COVID-19. On Tuesday, a separate report emerged that 500 students and staff in Pinellas County schools also faced a possible quarantine after similar exposure. So, yeah, the story's a bit long, but it ends with, "We need to be prepared for a challenging school year, which could be a roller coaster when it comes to the virus." The comparison of this deadly situation to an amusement park ride sums up the disdain of the ruling class and its lackeys for the lives of students, teacher staff, and their loved ones. So that's good times there. And it's not just the kids dying. The human cost of school reopening, 6 dead teachers in the U.S. in the past month. As a result of widespread reopening of K-12 schools across the U.S., at least 6 teachers have died from COVID-19 over the past month, bringing the death toll among educators to at least 210 since the start of the pandemic. All of these deaths were absolutely unnecessary and are the direct result, clearly this is biased, direct result of criminal policies carried out by Democratic and Republican politicians at every level in the interest of protecting the profits of the financial oligarchy. The recently leaked telephone recordings of interview between U.S. President Donald Trump and senior Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward have made clear that the Trump administration was fully aware of the massive and deadly danger posed by COVID-19 as early as January. The White House, both big business parties, and the corporate media have conspired to downplay the threat of COVID-19 to try and injure the population to mass death. Wow. This article, I read the headline and I was like, oh good, we'll find out about school responses. But we'll just say that Renee Casameda is the author of this, and I'll probably not just blanket read her stories because this is like a bit too heavy handed. But this is the World Socialist website. Yep. Hey, look, it's Kevin7, K7PJP. Greetings. Or, I guess if with that kind of handle, Kilo7 Papa Juliet Papa. All right. So let's move on. I'm sorry. Now it's time to get into the story that's like making headlines in other parts of the world and, you know, in the U.S., and that's the wildfires. So BBC covered the Oregon wildfire and mentioned more than half a million people in the state of Oregon are fleeing deadly wildfires that are raging across the Pacific Northwest. Fanned by unusually hot, dry wind, dozens of fires are sweeping the state. At least one is being treated as suspected arson. Governor Kate Brown said the exact number of fatalities was not yet known, though at least 4 were confirmed. More than 100 wildfires are currently scorching 12 western U.S. states. The worst affected are Oregon, California, and Washington, where entire towns have been destroyed. Some 4.4 million acres have been razed, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, an area larger than Connecticut and slightly smaller than Wales. So this is wild news. Wildfires are going out of control. Sorry, I forgot my tea in the other room. So now, I'm running out of breath. Sorry. I need my tea. What else? So The Guardian also had this story about wildfires. At least 232 people are dead in California, Oregon, and Washington. Washington government has said we have to think of it as a climate fire. Residents of Portland awoke on Friday, like hundreds of thousands more in Oregon, to fears of wildfires encroaching on them, and the air thick with smoke, pollution that dimmed the sun and turned the skies blood orange red in some areas. Historic fires are raging in the western U.S., with at least 23 people believed to have been killed so far in the worst affected states of California, Oregon, and Washington. So, Portland was named as the city with the world's worst air quality on Friday, according to IQ Air. And at least 500,000 people in Oregon, 1/10 of the population, are under evacuation orders, while California is tackling a huge fire in its northern region, deemed the largest wildfire in the state's history. So this is big news. It is all over the place. It is just bad news. And Portland residents have been told to Portland residents told to be ready to flee as West wildfire rages. They're covered all over the place. I was just checking to see if I had any other stories about them. Invest in rain. So just a bit of a break from the death and destruction to talk about other things that are depressing. Yesterday was the first a football game of the National Football League. And the NFL has decided to go ahead and have sports in stadiums where fans can buy seats and show up and watch the game in person. They don't have dummies in the stands. They just have mostly empty stands. But there are enough people that BBC Sport reported this. Kansas City Chiefs fans boo moment of unity as Mahomes shines again. So Houston Texans defensive end J.J. Watt was left confused by boos from fans during a pregame moment of unity as protests against racism took place on the opening night of the NFL season. Pockets of the crowd at the Kansas City Chiefs stadium booed as players linked arms shortly before the game started. Chiefs Alex Okafor took a knee during the national anthem while Houston's players stayed in the changing room. When play began, quarterback Patrick Mahomes inspired Kansas to a 34-20 win. So this is just a big surprise. It was a surprise, but not really a surprise, because Missouri and the Midwest is pretty racist. And then top it on with the Kansas City Chiefs is pretty offensive in itself, because they're kind of ripping on the indigenous people of the state, you know, kind of making fun of them and stuff. So that sucks for them. All right. Let's keep on going. Oh, look, we got about 7 minutes to go. Let's try not to be so sad. Oh, I can't, because the news is just always sad. Tobit Otaku dumps in 402 characters of 42 words in 9 lines. Coming up in about 8 minutes is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Find out what was in that dump. All right. What else do we have? Oh, yeah. And the White House still hasn't called Oregon or Washington or California to offer any help for the wildfires. You can check out the Independent for more news on that. The stories are so sad. It's like, come on, world. Come on. What is happening? Why are you burning down? So now, hey, Petey Boy. So here we go. Here's something we got for you that's coronavirus related, at least. It's not as sad. Massachusetts abandons its puzzling public health distinction between casinos and video arcades. A week after being sued over his arbitrary COVID-19 policy, Governor Charlie Baker says he will allow arcades to open. A week later, he was sued in federal court for keeping video arcades closed as a hazard while allowing casinos to reopen. He's abandoned that arbitrary distinction, announced today that he will let arcades reopen next week. His explanation illustrates how blithely politicians invoke public health to justify capricious rules that wipe out people's livelihoods. Attorney Mark Randazza filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of Gideon Koltoff, who owns Bitbar, a restaurant arcade in Salem. Randazza argued that Baker's policy, which distinguished between two kinds of businesses that feature electronic games, even though they pose similar risks of virus transmission, posed an unconstitutional content-based restriction on speech and violated the 14th Amendment's guarantee of equal protection. So, this is pretty wild. But it's interesting. It's an interesting, like, distinction, and kind of shows the people who are in charge of taking care of us, it's like we haven't had emergencies often enough to actually care what the politicians think. But now that there are emergencies happening, it's like, oh, these guys are idiots. Or, even worse, they're malicious. So, sad news. Sad news indeed. I found a Cheeto. All right. Well, we've got about 5 minutes and about 50 headlines, so I'm just going to run through a few of them real quick with you. So, from all sides, from the left, we've got Republican worries rise as Trump campaign pulls back from television and advertising. And then they have a picture of Donald Trump looking serious and another Republican looking very sad. Fearing a coming cash crunch, President Trump's campaign has pulled back from television advertising over the last month, ceding to Democratic nominee Joe Biden a huge advantage in key states and sparking disagreements over strategy within the president's senior team. So that's what the left is talking about. big news update here, big shakeup. All Sides is now declared that the AP is no longer center, but is leaned left or biased left. After months of research and analysis, including blind bias surveys conducted with nearly 4,000 people across the spectrum, as well as All Sides editorial review, All Sides found Associated Press news coverage of U.S. politics has a lean left bias. All Sides now rates AP politics and fact check sections as lean left. They separately rate AP news, its coverage of general news and world events, as center. So, just a heads up, AP political news, a little more biased than before, but other stuff they cover is pretty neutral. And then here's a jumble story, or kind of a bundled up story for you. We have peaked! Oh, Froggy Me has joined. We have about 3 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee. It's going to be exciting. I am just all over the place. It is Friday. I am so happy that it's Friday. We're going to skip that story. Senate Democrats have blocked Republican COVID-19 relief bill. They blocked that because, what do we got? Yeah, the Democrats are basically, there were three different stories listed here, and they were all blocked, saying that it was no Democrats vote for it because it looked like it had, it was a political stunt. So, sad news there. Our Congress is inept. All right. Oh no, we only got about a minute. Okay. Well, if you check out ProPublica, they have a nice long article about new research showing disproportionate rate of coronavirus deaths in polluted areas. And they profile a chemical plant in Louisiana in its industrial corridor and how mortality rates are there. Free speech, gun rights, on collision course in the United States, some experts say, this is coming from Reuters, the robust traditions are about to collide. So look for that. Reason has a bit longer article, but they've got one about a Nebraska county took his $25,000 property to settle a $986 tax debt. Now the U.S. Supreme Court could get involved. He didn't know that his own land had been sold out from under him until it had already happened. So this is pretty interesting. It's pretty neat because anytime you think about like the state and the state's ability to deprive individuals of liberty or property, it's anyway. If you're interested in that, reason.com is going to be good for you today. Reveal headline says we sent 500 tests. They don't answer calls. Inside ICE coronavirus testing disaster. And this is another one. If you want to cry or be upset, it's a long one, but it's at revealnews.org. And we're out of time. Thanks for listening.
This is News to Me with DJ Mark.
I clicked the wrong button. Anyway, DGZ's coming up with Tobe. I'll be back on Monday.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC.
Tobe.
Talk to you then.
Seven.